There's no avoiding stress, but being aware of why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm behaving as I am really helps me as a person and as a pilot.
Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 41 of the audio briefings. This is going to be part two of our conversation with Gord about pilot mindfulness and just finding balance between flying and life. And we're going to pick up where we left off with our conversation in episode 40. But before we do that, I just want to say thank you to a couple listeners that have gone onto our website, cardinalaviation.ca/podcast, and have supported us in what we're doing to get this content out to you, because we know that this has the potential to help so many people both look after their airplanes and look after themselves. So today I really want to thank Brent Giles as well as Scott Ryan for their support in helping us put these out. The other thing to do real quick is subscribe to us on Apple iTunes or on Spotify and follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation. So as we get into this conversation with Gord, and if you haven't heard episode 40, make sure you go listen to that first. It's really important. We were sitting here recording on video, and my wife Rhonda came around the corner, and she knows Gord from several years ago when he came to visit us at our home, and she popped her head around to say hi and snatched the headphones off of me and took the mic, and her and Gord had a little exchange, which I actually wanted to leave in here because it just adds to the realness of this. Gives you a little behind the scenes look. You know, I'm just not this person that sits here lecturing and talking. There is a more human side to the voice behind the mic, both on the podcast, both on the frequency, etc. So I'm going to leave that in there just for your listening pleasure, just to add a little bit of spice to this maybe. And I want to invite you to reach out to us through Instagram at Cardinal Aviation or by email info@cardinalaviation.ca. And let us know what you think about this episode. Let us know how it impacts you, how maybe you might be making some changes because of it, or if you think it's a bunch of hocus pocus. Either way, we want to hear from you, and we thank you for sticking with us through 41 episodes. We've got some great stuff coming up with Riley Cunningham talking about ferrying a classic J3 Cub with no transponder, no starter, hand prop, and the whole thing from Alberta over to Victoria through the Rockies with the door open. We're doing that interview tonight. And we're also going to have another session with Cardinal Aviation coach and corporate chief pilot Owen Stacey talking about resumes and continuing the networking conversation that we did in episode number 39. So with that, I'm going to cut straight to, well, Rhonda's conversation with Gord and then my conversation with Gord. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Hey, Rhonda. Hey, I love that you encouraged Ryan to sign up for my course. Whether he's gonna attend or not, I'm not sure, but he seems very interested. So I thank you for that. I think you're doing him a favor, and I love that he can't hear us right now.
I think it'll be good for him because he is not a feelings guy. So
well, none of us are, and I mean, you know, anybody in our generation, Rhonda, like, was or before us for sure, was not taught to incorporate emotions in anything we do. Like I was brought up with my parents who had zero clue, and I suspect yours did too, yeah, just because of our generation, right? So that's how we grew up.
Yeah. But then you have a family and some kids, and then you got to throw some emotions into that. Ryan shaking.
Or rather, my big word is awareness. There doesn't have to be a ton of emotions, but the awareness of, you know, so in my case, my awareness of how I had myself operating at this high stress level was I just wasn't aware. So I would do things like get in fights with people, get in unhealthy relationships. And if I can be aware of what I'm doing, aware of, you know, my values or what I need, then that's all I needed.
Yeah, for sure.
So I'm not going to be using the E word too much with Ryan.
No, we'll use awareness for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But more so awareness at home, right?
Well, it works everywhere. It counts everywhere.
I'm gonna mute your mic.
Yeah, he's going to mute my mic.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I actually thought about like signing up for your course too, just to listen in. But it'd be pretty interesting because I listened to the first half of the podcast and I was like looking at his face. I'm like, okay, so I'm going through my own issues here, like with COVID and stuff, like mental issues, anxiety, you know, all this stuff, right? Because it's just brought on. And then all of a sudden you're, you know, the only person that really changed was myself, like day-to-day life. And for him, it's just a routine that just keeps going, right? Because the nature of his job. So when I get into these dark areas, I just found like talking to him, he couldn't relate. I'm like, you deal with pilots all the time. Like, how could you not relate? You know,
in the I fix problems that can be fixed.
But this is like mental health, right? So it's just, I don't know, like, it's just one of those things. So I think this will be good for him. It'll open up that side of him and then he'll kind of understand that awareness, as you put it, in this side of the life, not necessarily the aviation side. Sometimes he buries himself too much into this stuff.
Yeah. Oh, I imagine. I imagine.
And tries to be the hero.
Yeah.
And hopefully he doesn't get exhausted over it. But
yeah, I get that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, hopefully I can help him with perspective on that.
Yes. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's an honor.
Yeah. Okay. Well, nice seeing you again.
See you, Rhonda.
Bye.
Nice to see you.
Okay, so there's a little behind-the-scenes snippet with Gord and Rhonda lamenting about my poor choice of priorities, and I guess that's something I'm going to have to take care of in my own house, but we'll see what kind of insight I can gain from doing Gord's course, which we're going to hear about in our conversation, which starts right now. Okay, so we got cut off last session. Some stuff was going on, and the last two things you said was black and white, and we were talking about in this business, in aviation, especially for pilots, vulnerability is something that can be viewed as a sign of weakness. And then you and I were talking about that in the last couple of days since we recorded last. Do you want to just pick up there maybe with the vulnerability thing? You said you were going to add that into your course coming up here.
Yeah, sure. It's an interesting word, vulnerability, for in my life, because vulnerability in terms of like the system of whether it's managing a stable approach or, you know, monitoring a fuel situation in the mountains, whether I'm going to turn around or not right now for weather or whatever, you know, a vulnerability in my operation that way is different than emotional vulnerability. And Brené Brown talks about that really with some great detail and context. I really like her work she's done on that. But our brains are evolved. The human brain has evolved to make black and white decisions very, very well. Again, that decision of to turn around or not, or to continue this approach or not, or to say this or not, or to react. How am I going to react in fight, flight, or freeze mode? Our brain loves black and white. It loves reacting. So it's, you know, it's one reason that the human species survived around, you know, 300,000 years ago or so, when we had lots of environmental threats from animals, and we were very systemically vulnerable back then, and the species survived because of how our brain was able to say, okay, you're gonna run now, okay, you're gonna fight now.
I would imagine it would have been okay for a cave person to turn to another cave person and be like, here comes a saber-toothed tiger, I'm scared, what should we do? If we take the same two cave people and call them like a flight crew, it's not super acceptable or normal for one to turn to the other and be like, I'm scared, what should we do? That admission of fear almost, you know?
I had an interesting experience with that exact thing in during a recurrent simulator experience a few years ago. And I found myself just talking through my scenario with my partner, with the person I was flying with. And, you know, I would say things like, you know, we're coming up to a point where, you know, something's on fire, some hydraulic system's not working, whatever, there's weather. We're going to have to do something. So we managing the situation. And of course my heartbeat's going bam, 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 bam. And I just slowed. I actually took a pause. I like paused myself. I remember doing this. I slowed myself down and I just said, you know what? We got a lot going on in here right now, and I've got a lot going on. I'm feeling some stress about this. I just want you to be like, include you in my, and it helped me to like build up the situational awareness of us as a team. So to put my partner at that point in the loop with where I'm at. So, you know, obviously there's going to be fear involved. We have, you know, whatever it was, two hydraulic systems down and something on fire. And, you know, you'd be crazy if you weren't feeling fear. You know, if we make the wrong decision, this is not going to go well. So, and that pause that I took, it was like, you know, there's a lot of research behind that pause, by the way. We can talk about that some other time too. It seems like every corner we have like another tangent we could go down, but that pause before allowing my brain to make a black and white decision is exactly the kind of reset and exactly the kind of awareness that that I now bring into my life and into my flying, into all communications at work, in the flight deck or on the ground with whoever at work and at home with my family. That stopping the reaction, the unconscious reaction, and just making it conscious. And that's what I did that day in that sim. I didn't know that I was doing that, but it really worked. It really, really worked. Me and my partner made some, it was a really successful experience in a stressful scenario. And I, from that day in that simulator, I started talking more and just putting my partner, who the guy, whether it was the guy I was flying with or depending what the scenario was, a flight attendant or whoever, in the loop saying, here's what, we got a lot going on right now.
We do the same kind of thing in the ATC world as well. Like we might be working a busy sector and we all have tells, and it takes a while to get to know what your tell is, you know, like when you're kind of reaching saturation. Like you may not have like the most airplanes you've ever had, but you have that. For me, I'm like, I shoulder check. I look over my shoulder to see if there's anybody close by that I can reach out to if I need it. You might get like tingly fingers or like, you know, elevated respiration, something. Everyone's got to tell. I was working with a new controller a couple years ago now as an instructor, and we were like pretty far into the training at this point with him, and we couldn't figure out what it was. And then I realized, I'm like, he's trying really hard to hide any sort of vulnerability. And so, you know, we went for a little walk and we had a little chat, and I said, look, like we're your family here, right? Like if you are stressed, you need to say something. If you're angry, show anger. If something happened on the screen with an airplane and it pissed you off, go ahead and grab a pen and throw the pen on the table and just be like, what the hell is he doing? And he looks at me, he goes, yeah, but I thought that as air traffic controllers, we're all supposed to be calm, cool, and collected all the time.
Right.
And I'm like, okay.
Right.
Yeah, we're supposed to present that way to our customers, to the pilots, but on this side of the mic and in this room, in this building, you can show some anger. You can show that you're upset. You can say, you know, this situation's kind of making me nervous. I'd like a little bit of help. We don't have to wear this mask all the time, because I think it ends up being detrimental at the end. If people can't see you showing your actual emotions or your vulnerability, there's an element of almost like, then they can't trust you, because what else is being masked here? Right. And I think there's room to translate that into the airplane as well, I think in some ways. But I feel like the old school generation of pilots still feel the need to either A, wear that mask, or expect others to wear that mask too. And, you know, put on the uniform, play the part.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that I don't think it's only the older generations. I do think it's less so with younger generations, in my experience. I mean, I was demonstrated anger very, very thoroughly when I was young, right? I did anger very well, right? I could throw things and yell and shame people and undress, you know, talk somebody down in front of a group of other people, and none of it got what I wanted to get done. None of it actually got me to a place of feeling good about the scenario or feeling good about myself. But I didn't know what else to do. And when I started to, there was a point where, actually right around the time you and I met in Mali, there was a point where I realized that people didn't like flying with me. And I really took that with me and started asking questions.
What? Why do people not like flying? There were some people that I did not like flying with. You were definitely not one of them.
Well, I appreciate that, but I'll tell you, I think I'm a lot better to fly with now. And I enjoyed flying with you back then. I think that you and I had a lot in common. But for some, the idea is to be able to work with people who we don't have a lot in common with sometimes and make it work and make it, you know. And I was really interested in how do I make it work comfortably? So at the end of a flight, at the end of a day, especially where I'm going to do this flight after flight after flight all day, where I feel well and I can sleep. And I like,
you remember what it was back then. I mean, we had like shitty old cell phones, but we didn't have like Facebook on our phone or all this. Like we used to have to call into a recorded line to find out what time we were going to report to work. And I remember you'd show up to work and be like, hey, who are you flying with today? Who are you flying with today? And I mean, everyone, it didn't really matter. So there'd be this whole, like, remember at the little coffee, there's the coffee bar there and we'd all be sitting there in the morning after walk arounds. And then captains and FOs would start making deals to swap crew.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to fly with so-and-so today. Do you want to? Yeah, no, I like flying with him. So there's like captains are swapping out of FOs and FOs are swapping out of captains. And like, it was very kind of high school popularity contest in a way. I remember that.
Yes. I remember that too.
So you made a Facebook post. We're going to kind of go down a bit of a difficult road here that I know you and I are kind of tiptoeing around, but you made a post on your LinkedIn or your Facebook about, you're off flying right now. And there was you looked at the radar and there was a line of thunderstorms and how that visceral reaction and how it made you feel, even though you didn't have to go flying. It's like, there's something that you link to that. I had the same thing for a very long time after our friend's accident. And you know, in flying, we lose friends and, more than we'd like, but some accidents kind of hit you more than others. And so with Luke's accident, that took me for a tailspin for about 2 years. You know, for a while, we didn't know what happened. And I remember going to work and I went from like loving flying and loving going to work to going to work and just being on like eggshells and on edge from the minute actually not even the minute I showed up to the minute I went home, just 24 hours a day. The reason why I'm linking to this is because you talked about looking at a weather radar playback on your phone and having this visceral reaction to thunderstorms. I would do the same thing with weather, with ride reports, where we'd be flying to Chicago or Toronto or whatever from Vancouver. And I would find myself waking up like every 45 minutes at night before a flight. And I would not sleep for the night before a flight because I would be getting up checking, is it going to be bumpy? Like I'm a pilot, like turbulence should not bother me. But for whatever reason, that accident for me linked, and the accident had nothing to do with turbulence, by the way. Really, there's some weird link there. And that vulnerability was really hard to hide because it impacted in so many ways. And that, and showing that kind of, I don't know, sensitivity to weather, to rides, just like kind of hyper awareness and not hiding it. I mean, I think, I don't know for sure, but I think that, I mean, cost me my left seat training because I was well into transitioning to the left seat on the jet. And as soon as I started showing that, weakness, I don't know, I don't want to link the word vulnerability with weakness, but as soon as I started showing that, that was the end of my left seat flying. And and I felt like, especially with the individual I was flying with, and he was a great guy, fairly old school, but I didn't feel like there was any way of coming back from that. It's like, okay, now I've been labeled, I'm screwed. And I think part of that is kind of almost how I ended up on the radar side of things doing ATC.
Yeah, I think it is too, Ryan. And I, over the last few years, I've considered your scenario with that training and how it ended up going the direction it went for you. And I think you're bang on there. One thing about Luke's, so everything that I'm doing now, everything that I basically starting in Mali, when I realized, hey, wait a second, I think people don't like flying with me. Right from then, right from about that point up until right now today, everything that I'm doing revolves around one word, and that word is awareness. Awareness of what is going on for me. Awareness of my body, my physical body, gives me signs of stress. Am I aware of those signs? Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. I mean, these days I'm much more aware. But after Luke's accident, my anxiety went out of control. And I was not very aware of that or why. And it manifested in things like starting fights with people. I was getting in fights with, you know, I was like cutting off relationships, like hacking relationships. You and I had a miscommunication, actually.
That cost us, what, 2.5 years?
Yeah, we lost touch for a couple of years. That caused me anxiety too. Luke, knowing that I would have done exactly what Luke did in that airplane, caused me anxiety. And I wasn't really aware of that causing me anxiety. So all of these are normal things to feel anxiety about: losing touch with a friend, having a miscommunication that goes, I don't know what to do with, getting in fights with my wife, getting a divorce, you know, eventually getting a divorce. These are the reasons that so much stress came up in my life. And there's no avoiding stress, but being aware of why I'm doing what I'm doing and why I'm behaving as I am really helps me as a person and as a pilot. And that's why, you know, say 15 years ago, if I would have even had a clue about some of this, I really could have saved myself a lot of anxiety and a lot of spooling up, you know, like operating in what's called sympathetic nervous system response, which is my brain wants black and white. It wants to fight or flight, get out. There's stress here, just like you in that scenario with your training. And there was no black and white. And you were processing, what you were doing was you were processing verbally with that guy that was training you your anxiety, and he was not cool with that. He didn't know how to deal with that. We're not, you know, especially like you said, the old school people were not trained to handle this or certainly not incorporated into radar rooms or flight decks. Mm-hmm. But it is a very, in my experience, as you know, I stopped keeping track, but I got upwards of 15,000 hours. It is a really strong contributor to my leadership now. And I don't sit there and talk about my feelings all day in a flight deck when there are decisions being made, but I do tell a person whether I'm feeling loaded up here. That was a great term for me. Mm-hmm. Listen, man, I'm feeling loaded up here. Just be aware of that and give me, you know, build that into our situational awareness. Okay. And when I raised my awareness and saying, yeah, I am feeling loaded up here, I actually like started making more conservative decisions in the airplane, which is a good thing. So when I might bring, you know, I might burn some more, you know, on a good day when everything's perfect and I'm feeling amazing and I slept amazing, I might burn a little more fuel before I make this decision to say, turn around or go somewhere else or whatever. But today, when I'm feeling super loaded up about whether it's Luke being dead or not being in touch with my friend Ryan or not sleeping well last night or whatever, fill in the blank. If I'm struggling today already, and now I have this big decision coming up, you know what? I'm just going to make it right now. I got a little more fuel than I might have yesterday or some other time. And that is a good thing. That's not a bad thing. So I actually started making better decisions, more responsible decisions in flight as well. And it all came from awareness.
And we talk about personal minimums, right? Mm-hmm. And those are fluid. And so a guy like you with 15,000 hours, I mean, you've got personal minimums. And quite frankly, with 15,000 hours, your personal minimums are actually probably more conservative than they would have been when you had 5,000 hours.
They are right now, yeah, for right? sure.
Because you're more aware. You've been there. You're kind of like, you know what? I want to be safe. And quite frankly, I don't want to work that hard. You know, I shouldn't have to work that hard for a safe outcome. I want to do what I know works. And therefore, these are my numbers done. But so we talked about a lot of the issues and awareness has come up. So, I mean, coming out of Luke's accident, I think we both made some pretty significant life changes. It's been 9 years. I'm at the point now where I mean, you never really get past it, but I think I've gone as far from it as I can and made life changes to try and, I don't know, cope, I guess is the other word we use, right? Like, be it my change in jobs. I mean, when I interviewed at Nav Canada, they said, well, why do you want to come do this? And I said to them, I said, look, I've lost a number of close friends to accidents. If I can just be part of preventing one in my career here, then it will have been worth it. That's it. That was it wasn't like, oh, I love talking to airplanes. I was like, no, I want to prevent accidents.
Yeah.
And little did I know at the time that that's not a once in a career thing. That can be a once a week or once a month thing. So that's the rewarding part about it for me. And then Cardinal Aviation doing this and coaching pilots and working with general aviation pilots, and working on situational awareness. I mean, I was flying with a client not even 6 months ago in a twin engine propeller driven airplane. And we were coming in towards the airport and he runs the descent checklist. He goes, engine instruments. And he looks and he goes, is our oil pressure supposed to be that low? And I'm like, no. And he goes, okay, well, what do we do? And you know what my first thought was, Gord?
Tell me.
Guess. What was my first thought?
You were on approach?
We're like on descent. We're like 10 miles from the airport, descending back towards the airport.
Your reaction would have been, I mean, your body would have wanted to do something quick. Shut it down.
Except it wasn't. My reaction was, oh, we'll just pull it to idle. It'll be fine. We'll get back to the airport.
Right.
No shit, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, you know what? The airport's right there. I'll just pull it back to idle. We'll get it back to the airport. That lasted about a minute. And then I thought about Luke. And then I thought about Matt and like part of my language. But I'm like, Ryan, what the fuck are you doing? Mm-hmm. Shut it down and feather it. And so we did that and we landed. So, you know, I went to ATC because I wanted to prevent accidents. But in that case, in that scenario where we had to declare an emergency, where we ended up shutting down the engine, you know, I think the experience that we have from our past, from Luke's accident, I mean, he saved me on that day. I have no doubt.
Yeah.
I'm like, do not go down this road. So we learn in tribal knowledge. And we have to carry all this forward. So that's how I dealt with it. But you know, I changed jobs and now I'm kind of back in my flying groove by helping work with people to help them be safer and make good decisions. You are doing what with it?
Well, like you said, if you can help, I really liked how you say it is. If you can help people make better decisions, and if you can help even one pilot avoid an accident, then that's what you're here for. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm just doing it from a different side of the same coin, but it's the same. It's exactly the same. In fact, I say it the same way. If I can help even one person, then that's exactly what I'm doing this for. That's what I want to do. And if I can help even one pilot increase their personal sense of peace, increase their situational awareness, increase their leadership skills, thereby increasing all those things at the same time. The great news is that what's the term? A rising tide floats all boats, right? So whether somebody raises their situational awareness or their, you know, emotional awareness of themselves, everything else in their operation and in their life will also increase, will float with that rising tide. As my awareness of my anxiety level increases, so does my situational awareness as a pilot, my decision-making skills, my team building skills, my team cohesiveness, all these things that also end up floating each other higher. And emotional awareness is one that really, in my experience, floats all of them. It floats all of them higher. So that's what I'm doing.
I feel like it kind of goes along with, you can't help somebody that doesn't want to help themselves, and you can't be helped if you don't ask for help. Really, I think like the word help is the water to that tide.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah. I mean, putting it was for me when I put my hand up and started asking questions and saying, hey, I don't feel great. about this. You know, I don't feel great about going to work so tired today. And when I put my hand up and said, do you have any ideas? You know, I would ask people just like you, Ryan, you know, you have any ideas? Like, I don't feel great. What would you suggest? That was what started rising the tide for me, was helping me to build awareness and contribute to all of those things: situational awareness, leadership, you know, teamwork.
And I mean, and you're doing a bunch of, you're doing some workshops with pilots. You recently did some training, like specific mm-hmm. training in that arena. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Last year, or maybe it was 2 years ago, I did a search online. I was discussing this with my partner, Amber. She's got a ton of experience with facilitating mindfulness classes, courses, seminars for like management teams at hospitals, high schools, jails, all these very dynamic. She's been doing this for like 10 or 15 years. And about 2 years ago, I said to her, I wonder what kind of supports there are in sort of the avenue that you provide in terms of like seminars or courses or support for like to develop a successful management team. I wonder if there's a similar thing for pilots. So I did a search online, and it's amazing, Ryan. Like, when I think about this, how many things can I search for online where I get zero hits? Like, when I think about that,
starting pilot job that pays over 60 grand a year.
Oh yeah. Okay. So zero. Right? Or I'm sure something would come up, you know, 7 days. What's not written in there is you're working 7 days a week, 13 hours a day. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. I mean, I made 60 grand here when I was pretty new, 7 days a week, 13 hours a day.
Yeah.
Super unhealthy. But anyways, nothing came up, nothing. And I was just blown away. It was like, this is amazing. How can this be? How can there be so much professional support and like peer support, which I also am part of, by the way, through my association is peer support. But how can there be so little in the way of support and development for pilots in 2020? It was 2018, whatever, at the time. It was like, I'm fascinated by this. And so with that kind of I was very curious about how this could be and how am I doing this wrong? Like, I refined my search a few times and I came across, I came across one website, which was mindfulaviator.com, which is now I'm great friends with Carl, who designed Mindful Aviator. Love him. He goes at the same coin as you and I from a very meditation, mindfulness meditation based outlook, where he very, very much focuses on the science behind mindfulness meditation and the benefits to anybody. And I'm with him on that, though I didn't go to university like he did for a degree in teaching it. So I kind of do it from a really relatable point of just building awareness, just becoming aware of why I behave the way I behave. It's not good or bad. It just is. And dealing with that and starting discussions with pilots around, you know, flight-based scenarios or life-based scenarios, whatever comes up, it seems to me to be really beneficial. So I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep offering these courses. I'm starting another one this week, as you know.
I feel like you're really hesitant to talk about your course.
Mm. No, not at all. What would you like to know?
What is it? What's the format? Like, how do I know this one coming up is full, but how do people find out about it? Or if they want to join maybe a future one?
The course, this 8 week one that I'm just about to start this week, starts with the looking at a definition of mindfulness as written by from a science-based perspective in North America. It was written about 20 years ago, and it's sort of shapes, like session one, for example, session one of eight will be about an hour to hour and a half. And it'll basically just look at that definition. We'll do a mindfulness practice together, share like a word or two each about what it was like. And that's it. And I pass on every session. I will send out like a follow-up email to everybody suggesting whether it's like something to have a look at, like to read, or a little video to look at, and to encourage a daily short mindfulness practice for everybody. And I talk everybody through it in this session, and it's quite simple, but that's it. And then every week we'll do like week two, we'll look at paying attention, you know, mindfulness through the lens of paying attention, very much in the context of what you and I have been talking about, Ryan, like paying attention to what is going on for me, just paying attention in general to whatever comes up in life from a mindfulness perspective and from an awareness perspective, building awareness. That's
good. I was really nervous, and you're on to session two, and I haven't heard the word feelings yet. So like my anxiety for this course has just come down a notch, because I know I can go through the first 2 weeks without having to deal with feelings. So we're good.
That's a word that feelings are something that happen, right? I love that you brought it up, because feelings are I was taught zero about feelings. I was taught zero about managing feelings. And there's no real managing that has to consciously happen, but being aware of my feelings is the thing. Being aware of them is it. And once I'm aware of what comes up for me, that's the rising tide. Once I'm aware of them, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's, like you said, anger is a real popular one for me. And it seems to be popular for a lot of other males in that I speak to, male pilots. Anger is a way for my body to process fear. Anger is a symptom. It's not like the end feeling. It's how fear displays in a physical, unconscious way. So discussing the having fear on the table, like, we're not going to sit there and talk about fear for an hour, but even just knowing that is interesting, isn't it? Like, it's just the truth. Like, fear processes physically through our body and comes out unconsciously as anger often. And even just knowing that, like, that's just a fact. There's lots of really interesting science behind that. I can forward you readings or links or whatever if you want to, which I do in the course. But even just knowing that, like, huh, that's interesting. Like, when I read that the first time, and I looked at my, you know, my family history, my dad, my grandfathers, and like, especially my, if you consider like the generations that your parents and your grandparents grew up in, if you're anything like me, I was like, well, that makes sense. You know, they grew up through, you know, whether it was this war or this depression or this famine or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, of course they were fearful.
You know, our great grandkids are going to look and be like, yeah, my grandparents, they grew up in that COVID time, you know, the 2020 plague. Like, it's no wonder they lost their mind. And you know.
No wonder they were so angry.
Yeah.
No. Well, hopefully not, because even just being aware of my fear or anger or whatever has made me less reactive and more responsive. So those are two words that I also found interesting. Was reaction is like an unconscious thing where my brain says black and white, right? Do this or this. These are the only answers. And responding to a scenario or emotion or feeling, whatever, is more of a, it just makes it more conscious. It makes it a choice of mine. It's like, okay, how am I going to respond to this? Whether it's a stressful scenario on a flight deck or in Victoria Terminal or with my family. Am I going to come home after 4 days on the road, we're flying, and instantly start a fight with my wife? 5 years ago, the answer is yes. but now that I know how stressful it can be to be away from home for, in my case, over half the month, every month, knowing, just being aware of how stressful that can be, when I come home, I'm not going to react. I don't react in the same way I used to. I will choose my response. And lots of times it is to not respond or pause or just say, listen, I'm loaded up after 4 days. Let's come back to this or whatever it is later.
I just avoid altogether.
Or avoid, yeah, avoid.
I'm a pick your battles kind of guy, and I tend to pick very few and save it for the big ones.
Well, I used to do that too, but what I was doing was I'd end up just stacking them up in the corner.
It's true.
So they would stack and stack and stack and stack, and at some point they would fall over, usually on top of me. and I wouldn't like that. That didn't feel very well.
No.
So that's what I'm doing, is to even just bring awareness to people of, or how big is your stack?
Well, that's kind of a personal question, Gord. I'm not gonna lie. Anyway, okay, this is going downhill fast. You know what? I think this has been awesome. We've said a couple times already, we could do this all day. I want to maybe make this a semi-regular thing and maybe pick up somewhere on one of these tangents and see where it goes in the future. I'm going to put the links to your Facebook, your LinkedIn, GordonAmber.com in the show notes so anybody can go check it out. And yeah, I just wanted to thank you for your time, for doing two sessions with me here. I know that we will be able to reach and help at least one person through this talk, or at least make some people more aware. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time, and thank you.
I appreciate yours too, Ryan. I think you're doing really great stuff with Cardinal Aviation. This is, kind of an exciting time, isn't it? I think, I mean, the idea of supporting one other pilot or one other person is, I think, exciting.
I mean, what was it like probably 8-9 years ago? We said pilots need help, but there's nothing out there for them. We need to do, and we talked about doing something together, or like some sort of pilot outreach or critical incident stress thing. Because I mean, here we go down another tangent. The airlines, the big companies, they have teams to help pilots manage stress. But there's a lot of pilots out there that are, you know, corporate pilots working for 703 operators, working for 704 operators that don't have those robust help networks. What's there for them? And I think that's where someone like you comes in. You're like, I'm here to listen. I'm here to, let's talk it out. I can point you in the right direction. And I know in my case, not to end on Luke's accident again, but I had a hard time processing that. And I reached out and to friends and said, I'm having a hard time with this. And to be honest, a friend of mine who's a captain at a major airline reached out to their pilot help kind of group and actually got me in within their program. And I ended up flying to Toronto, I think 3 times to go see a counselor that was actually meant for the pilots of that airline. And they got me in to see him. And that, I mean, I flew from Vancouver to Toronto 3 times just to go see this guy. And that's because I reached out to a friend. He reached out to his network at his company and they helped him out. And I know that my company, Nav Canada, has done the same thing as well. Nav Canada has reached out to pilots of smaller companies and said, hey, look, if you need something, let us know. We will put you in touch with our people. So that said, like asking for help is the first step, I think, is maybe where that circles back to. And whether that's with me, whether that's with Gord, whether that's just with a friend, just anybody, right?
Yeah, I think that is, in my experience, that's by far the hardest step too, Ryan. Especially in good times, like when I'm not in break, when I wasn't in breakdown mode, it was impossible for me to even consider like supporting myself. Well, I have nothing to support. I'm doing great. Right. But I mean, it would be,
what is it? Kikoranido.
It's all, what was that? It's all good.
Yeah. It's all good. Yeah. Some, it's what we'd all say. Around. It's all good. It's all good. It's all good. Even if it's not really all good. All right, dude, go enjoy your day.
Thanks, man. You too, Ryan.
All right, thank you very much for the time.
You're welcome. And you as well. It's a great idea.
You have it, part two of our conversation with Gord. I'm really hoping that we can get him back and make this a semi-regular thing. This is a conversation that needs to be had, that needs to be continued. I really hope you guys got something out of it. I'm just gonna let it speak for itself. Again, we've got interviews coming up shortly with Riley Cunningham and another one with Owen Stacey. We'll pepper in some technical content in there and flying tips. But if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to this podcast, follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation, and visit us online, www.cardinalaviation.ca. If you want, you can hit the podcast page there for Gord's links, and you can also support the podcast if you feel so inclined. So until next time, fly safely, never stop learning, and take care of yourself.